Hello, I'm Simon Wakeling, and welcome to this month's edition of Six Radio, the show produced for 2MCE on Wiradjuri land by researchers in the School of Information and Communication Studies at Charles Sturt University. A few weeks ago, I received an email from an old friend telling me about an amazing project involving libraries that he and his wife are leading in Tanzania. This inspired my colleagues and I on the Six Radio team to put together a programme that showcases this work, along with the work of another organisation doing similar work in Cambodia. These two NGOs, or non-governmental organisations, are at very different stages of development, but equally inspiring in their aims. Let's hear who they are.
We are Luke and Rachel Elliard. We're both from the UK, but we live in Tanzania. Only very recently, we set up our own NGO focused around education called the Bouncing Books Foundation in northern Tanzania.
My name is Beatrice Montariol. I am French. I work for SIPAR NGO based in Cambodia. And I am now currently consultant in charge of project development.
Over the next half an hour, we're going to hear much more about these two organisations. To get us started, I asked Beatrice to provide some background to SIPAR.
SIPAR was created in France in 82 when a big number of refugees from Southeast Asia, from Laos, Vietnam and Cambodia, arrived in Europe. And SIPAR was created to help the refugees who arrived in France to settle, to find a home, a job, etc. And then SIPAR moved directly to the refugee camp to help Cambodian people first to learn French before they go to France. And then they develop other educational services for the Cambodian refugees in Thailand, in the camp. When the refugee moved back to Cambodia, SIPAR settled in Cambodia in 81 to develop educational projects, mainly for primary school, and then start to work on literacy, reading promotion, first for primary school, and then develop new projects to improve the literacy rate was very, very low after several years of war, etc. So SIPAR decided to have this huge mission of struggle against illiteracy, to promote reading, since 92-93.
Rachel explains how Bouncing Books has a much shorter history.
So we're very different, actually, and only been up and running since January of this year. But it's a story that started a few years before that. Back in around 2019, when Luke and I decided we wanted to have a complete change in life and careers, we started to research what we might do with our lives from an NGO education perspective. That just kind of ticked the box for us and something we'd like to focus on. And after a very inspirational climb of Kilimanjaro, we decided that Tanzania was a place we wanted to research and look into. And through asking a lot of local NGOs and contacts and networks on the ground, we discovered that there was an enormous gap in the provision of books, both in English and Swahili, to both government and non-government schools, but to primarily government schools. But the Bouncing Books Foundation is based on the premise of providing libraries, educational materials and books to government schools in northern Tanzania.
So what exactly are Bouncing Books seeking to do? Luke explains.
The first pillar is around building libraries. We were requested by the local government as part of our licensing of Bouncing Books to focus on 10 schools, which were the highest non-performing schools in English. We have started our research. We've met each of the 10 schools, but we've now focused on the ground on 3 schools. We've met with the head teachers. We've met with the community leaders. And we are focusing on working out how we will approach building the libraries there. We've obtained finance for the first 2 libraries, which is great. We are at that planning stage where we're now discussing how we do the floor plans and how we build the content of those libraries. We've also been lucky enough, before we left Dubai to move to Tanzania, we were donated 10,000 books from various people and schools. The second pillar is educational materials. a lot of the learning that's done is very much rote learning. There are limited textbooks available in the schools. They've got, in some cases, 1 to 20 students, and there's no additional learning materials. So we focused on actually from discussing with various people on the ground that actually flashcards would actually be a really good idea to develop. So we've developed some prototypes. We've focused on specifically on the curriculum. So we're now providing the initial run to 3 schools to then assess how they will be taken before we go a bit more larger scale on that. And then the third pillar is the mobile library. And this is actually a legacy from an uncle of mine who passed away, Roland. And this was initially our goal. It was going to be a mobile library. But when we hit the ground, we realized there's limited use of books. They didn't quite understand how they were going to be using them. How do we give them out? And so what we felt was we needed to build the ecosystem of understanding about reading, understanding about the importance of books by actually having libraries in each of the schools. Then we could build in maybe when we've got the 10 schools done, we will use the mobile library to bring change and choice to their reading journey.
As we heard earlier, SIPAR have been active for more than 30 years. Beatrice describes some of the work they've done in this time.
So we start to work with the Ministry of Education to implement library in primary school and to train librarians and then to train trainers of librarians. After implementing more than 200 libraries in primary school, the Ministry of Education started to do it by himself. Now we have supported 300 libraries in primary school. But since nearly 20 years now, we extend our action to other population. We start to have mobile library also to go to villages, remote areas, slum, poor community. And then we extend also our activity of implementing fixed library in hospital and then in prison and then in garment factories, in brick factories, etc. Now we have a huge network of more 600 library, fixed or mobile, to reach more than 300,000 readers or learners. Because the library changed a little bit, little by little, to be more and more multimedia library. First, it was only books, and then we implement with some audiovisual and digital tools. And we develop also other activities around the book and around the reading. Like for the most vulnerable children, we provide tutoring, after school tutoring, in order to struggle against the dropout from primary school. And so the library became a kind of mobile or fixed learning center and development center for the most vulnerable population. SIPAR have 60 Cambodian people who are working, but we are partner of several ministries. And we collaborate with other partners to extend the service that a library can provide to the population. But the mobile library, we have 3 kinds of mobile library. We have van, we have tuk-tuk, and then we have boat library also on the big lake where a fishing community are living. So we train librarians, we train people who take care of the library, we provide supplementary books and stationaries, but we train also a lot of trainers of librarians and educators in order to have sustainability for each of the kind of libraries.
Books are obviously at the heart of what both SIPAR and Bouncing Books do. So why are books such an important thing to focus on?
Tanzania has quite a unique challenge in particular in that their primary schools are taught 100% in Swahili and English is taught as a second language. And when they transition into secondary school, the day they arrive into secondary, the entire curriculum is taught in English. And the dropout percentage at secondary is around 50 to 60% after the first couple of years because children just cannot cope with that transition. So there is a real need to help improve English in primary schools. And without access to books written in English and to be able to learn the language more fluently, than their current approach, which is very rote learning of English, it's really difficult for them to stick in at secondary school and pass those exams that they need to even get into secondary. Now, libraries are particularly helpful, primarily because schools that we're supporting do not have space in their schools to be able to store library books. They're either not watertight or secure. So to be able to provide a place where they can go and read, the books are accessible, they have storage that's dry, and they don't get damaged and they're secure, is really vital for those children to access books. But more broadly than that, because books are so scarce in Tanzania, in both Swahili and in English, the value of books is not often realised or really understood. So there's a real educational piece around the value of books and what it can do to further educate children throughout their educational lifetime and into jobs, but also to expose them to more general knowledge and the world beyond their village. So to expose children to a world of curiosity and creativity is seen through providing books in either English or Swahili. It's really helping the communities, the families and the teachers understanding the value of just opening a book and looking at the pictures and using their creativity to storytell, to develop their curiosity, to help with their innovative thinking, which is something that can be really lacking across the schools.
Beatrice explains how books have been one of the keys to the reconstruction of Cambodia.
Maybe you know that Cambodia faced a huge war and genocide. And during the genocide of the Khmer Rouge, during nearly 4 years, all kind of educational, cultural activities and material were destroyed, like books, libraries. Teachers were killed. And in fact, after these 4 years of genocide, only 20% of the intellectuals were survived and 80% disappeared. So to reconstruct, to rebuild a country when you don't have any more any educational structure, like no more schools, no more teachers. So it took a long time to rebuild little by little. And in fact, books is the roots of knowledge, the roots for learning. So we decide to implement and to start to have books. So we start to publish books also, and to help also publisher to publish books and more. And to make the book available first in library, because children can access to these books during their learning. And then to also bring books to the family, to have the books who go inside the families, to make the books available. And something very important to develop, not only children, but teenagers and adults. It's because we start to have also our mobile libraries and to bring books to garment workers in their factories, to bring books to prisoners in prison, or to bring books to children in hospital when they are, in hospital for operation or other things. So to make the books available as much as possible directly in the hand of the readers. The second thing is that you have to know that Khmer alphabet is the longest alphabet in the world. They have 74 letters. And you can imagine how much it's complicated to learn to read Khmer. And for children in grade 1, 2, and 3, it's really a nightmare to learn how to read and write. So if they learn to read and write, but have no books to practice, they forget very quickly. So the books are really something to help to improve literacy at all levels.
We were also interested to know how both organisations work with local communities to ensure they're providing effective support. Here's Beatrice.
When we work in prison, we work directly with the Ministry of Interior and we collaborate with them and we train prison officers to be librarian. And we train also all the manager of a prison to take care of the library, to find budget to buy books, etc. For the schools, we collaborate directly with Ministry of Education at all level, from national level, to fit to the national policy on book development for primary and secondary school. And we train trainers and librarians. And then for the garment factories, we train workers or staff from the garment factories to take care of the library for the workers. And the main thing is that all the manager of each, I will say, institution need to be involved and to be convinced that it's very important in order to support and sustain. For the communities, we work in different communities, like I say, in slum, in brick factories, in villages, in fish community. We always collaborate at least with the village chief or the commune chief in order to have counterparts inside the community. And when in a village, the children borrow books at home, we identify volunteers from the community to have a micro library. And then if a micro library is implemented in a village or a slum or a school, then we don't need to come back. We only come back to change the books, because the population know where they can borrow books. The involvement of volunteer at village or slum level is very, very important to continue the services.
Rachel sees lots of similarities with the Tanzanian context.
It's actually very similar to CIPAR in terms of the consultation with the ministry, and what we would call village and ward chiefs is absolutely critical. So we're only 6 months into our journey, and a lot of that 6 months has been about initially building relationships with various levels of the community. That might be the village chief, who oversees the village or the school in which we might be building a library, the ward chief, who looks after a selection of villages together, who then reports into the district chief, which then reports into the Ministry of Education. And I think it's been critically important for us to do a lot of consulting to understand the needs, to work out what has been done previously and not worked and why that hasn't worked. And we've also learned that there is a degree of education from ourselves as well, and working with the teachers on not only their wants, but their true needs. So we found it's quite difficult sometimes to distinguish between their needs and their wants. Their wants can sometimes go off the scale, and we have to bring it back to really what is needed to improve English levels, educational levels and exam results. But also working with them on the value that our NGO bouncing books could bring to them by helping the teachers and train the teachers on the value that books can bring, flashcards and educational materials can bring. But coming back to the community working, within the scope of where we work, a lot of approvals are required. So building relationships with ministerial bodies, working through our plans and proposals and getting their physical sign off and approval is absolutely critical for us to do work and add value within Northern Tanzania. So they are becoming the absolute bedrock of what we do within those communities.
Luke also explained that they have faced some challenges in launching and operating bouncing books.
We thought that both of us not having NGO experience was going to probably be the biggest challenge we had. But we found that actually both having had corporate jobs before within professional services firms, we actually learned that flexibility, having that mindset to learn and absorb new ways of doing things actually is really helped us. It's helped us in areas such as relationship building. We think some of those skills that from our previous life have actually helped us in this in building the NGO here. I think the biggest challenge initially for setting up and the logistics has been the red tape. At the moment, it's real challenge setting up the entities. Initially, we weren't in the country. And then in the country, dealing with the visas, the taxes, dealing with the community, as Rach was just talking about, really making sure we're going through the right protocols. That's been really challenging. So the red tape, I think, has been another big challenge for us. And then, honestly, what I felt would be an easy process around funding and raising funds from the multitudes of people we know and the corporates has actually been a real challenge. It's the engagement, the level of engagement required with potential donors on multiple platforms. We've not been used to social media apart from looking at Facebook, as most people do, but actually learning that we have to be on Instagram, on Facebook, on LinkedIn, it's a challenge we're facing at the moment and something that hopefully we'll get more and more used to as we go on.
For SIPAR, the challenges are slightly different.
In fact, the main challenge in the library sector in Cambodia is that first, there is no university to train librarians. There is no certificate. There is no official training of librarians. The library science is totally absent in Cambodia. So for the future, it's quite complicated to imagine who and how the next generation of librarians will be trained. Second, there is no public library. There is no network of public libraries. So again, to develop reading and to make the books accessible to the majority of people, it's still with a strong intervention of NGO or also in other international organizations like Asia Foundation or World Bank, etc. The habit of reading is still quite shy. It's better, but still needs a lot of activities to promote reading because the habit is not so much developed. And also sometimes the institution don't think that books is so important. They put priority on other things. To get the budget from institution, it means that from the Ministry of Finance and Economic, it's still very challenging. But fundraising for SIPAR, it's still complicated, but less and less, because after 30 years, we have good reputation, we have expertise. So we got nearly 50% of our funds from international cooperation.
We were also interested to find out more about what inspired our contributors to do the work they do. Here's Rachel and Luke.
There really was, I think, a need and a want in both of us to do something much more meaningful, much more purpose-driven. It took us a while to figure that out. And we eventually kind of landed on our idea. And once the idea came to fruition, the administration we started to work through and it became a reality, then we were obviously very fueled to move into this new life quite quickly. But I think it was just craving a much more purposeful, meaningful way of living our lives.
We were looking for a change, just a change away from that corporate career. But the realization we had a number of years back that the value of time that we had left was really important and using our lives for better. And I think, honestly, for me, to give my kids, we've got an 8 and a 9-year-old, some more inspiration about the future, about what you can do with your lives rather than just having a 12-hour career and not seeing them on a day-to-day basis was quite demoralizing. So I think for me, inspiring the kids was an important personal motivation.
Beatrice explains how a long connection with Cambodia has inspired her work.
In fact, my life is very much connected with the story of Cambodia. Because I started to work as a teacher, French teacher in refugee camp in 86. So you imagine I spend more time in Cambodia with Cambodian than in France. So as this country faced a war and genocide and reconstruction and rebuilding and start to develop, I am happy to share this connection to this country and the people of Cambodia. And so when I start to work with them in the early 90s in Cambodia and to see how much the country needed to be rebuilt, but to work with them on this rebuilding and starting, of course, by education. And when we speak about education, of course, the books are essential. So to see the enthusiasm, the dynamism, the motivation of the people who were so poor. And after so many years of war, it's a very good lesson of life. And I feel very humble when I see how much they have to face to rebuild their country, to believe in education, the parents who build the schools, the teacher who in the beginning were volunteers with a very, very, very low salary, and to see all this step and step to develop the country, and now to have a country more and more modern, more and more, offering to children better opportunities to develop their country, their community, and Asia.
So what are the plans for the future? Here's Luke.
I think next steps depend entirely on whether the, not so much the libraries, I think they're going to be a success. I strong hope they are, but the flashcards, if they're a success, how do we grow those? How do we potentially raise funds to be able to circulate them across the rest of the schools in Tanzania would be phenomenal. But I think that's really just a pie in the sky at the moment. If we're not achieving our aim and our vision, which is to enhance the reading and learning opportunities for the kids and to improve their English, we will tweak. We will reassess how our model is working, and we'll learn from other organisations such as CPAR to learn about what they've done over 30 years, to learn about the tuk-tuks they've done, the boats they've done. I think it's fantastic, and it gives us such a great idea of what's possible to achieve through libraries and books. Really motivated about what our plans are in the future.
And what about CPAR? Are there any new projects on the horizon?
Yes, of course. We never stop to create new projects or to improve the existing project. We start in prison since 12 years, and it was first only basic libraries, but now they are computerized the library. It means that the prison officer and prisoner librarian manage a library with a software. And now we introduce computer in the library in prison. So we increase and improve the existing network of library in different areas, like garment factories, like prison, like schools. We are working more and more now in high school for the teenager who live in countryside and have no or very few access to digital devices or to have enough books to study more than only textbook. So we create new projects, we improve the existing project. We will start a new project in brick factories. It's terrible because the condition of life of the workers in brick factory is terrible. They all live together in a community near the brick factories. And most of the children don't go to school. The parents are totally illiterate. So we start pilot project, but now we start a real project. It means that normally when we work in an area for public vulnerable, outside the educational services, it's at least 9 years or 10 years in order to have impact and to have sustainability, but it at least 9 to 10 years for each project. And because we create new projects, we have a no ending mission, I think. But the evolution of the mission continue also.
That's all we have time for today. A huge thank you to Beatrice, Rachel, and Luke. Not only. That's all we have time for today. A huge thank you to Beatrice, Rachel and Luke, not only for contributing to the show, but also for the amazing and inspiring work they're doing. Perhaps after hearing about this work, you'd like to find out more, or make a donation, or offer some other form of support. If so, you can head to their websites at bouncingbooks.org and SIPAR, that's SIPAR.org. We'll be back next month with a show exploring how Australian libraries support LGBTQ+ communities. So until then, happy borrowing.